This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Good afternoon, friends. It is the Gas House Gang. And today, Kevin Wheeler in for Tom Ackerman. I'm Chris Ranji. We will talk to Greg Amsinger from MLB Network. That'll be around 12:15. We will have Mike Claiborne at 12:30 today. And we have plenty to discuss as it pertains to your St. Louis Cardinals, who just finished up a series at home against the visiting Mariners, and they were swept. And Kevin, I think Seattle is a good team. I know they came in and still, a few games under 500, but they came in, they won. Seattle's better than this. They were a playoff team last year. I didn't expect the Cardinals to get swept, but I think you're looking at teams, even though they are in opposite places in the standings going into the series, it's probably a little flipped. The Mariners are a better team than the Cardinals.
Seattle's one of the top teams to win the American League West.
Yeah.
They're in the ALCS last year. They're a World Series contender. They've gotten off to a slow start because Cal Raleigh got out slow.
Yeah.
And I think Julio Rodriguez is he's an annual slow starter. He usually doesn't even start hitting until June. They're fine, and they're clearly one of the better teams in the American League. I know there's no question about it. And when you look at the weekend, there were plenty of problems, right? I mean, Matthew Liberatore getting beat up, the whole pitching staff getting beat up on Saturday, blowing game late yesterday, or at least losing the game late yesterday. But two of the three games, you're in really tight, good baseball games. And the pitching is a bit of a concern, but you've got some guys. Mason Wynn's been crushing the baseball for more than 2 weeks. Nathan Church has been hitting the baseball. J.J. Weatherholt's powering up, and he's playing like one of the best second basemen in the entire sport.
Yeah.
So it's not all bad, but, a sweep is still a sweep when it comes to the standings. We just have to, I think it's important to not alter our view from week to week or even month to month on the season, right? Getting off to a good start doesn't all of a sudden mean you're a contender. We've seen Pittsburgh do it a million times and then fade as it goes. We hope that these guys don't fade. In fact, there's an argument that a lot of guys can get better as this goes because you've got young guys like Nathan Church getting opportunities. The weekend was nothing terrible. It sucks to get swept, but you didn't play that badly. You played right with them. Each game is a 1-2 run game.
Yeah, and yesterday we had the ABS challenge, which happened in the ninth inning, which went against the Cardinals, but it was the correct call.
Yeah.
It's a hell of a swing, though, to go from thinking you have a strikeout to, no, actually, that's a game-winning home run. So, it's not what you want to have happen, but that was such a bad call. And it went
How that pitch got called a strike. It was a full ball off the plate.
Dude, I got to tell you. These umpires need to lock it in. They need to tighten it up. And I get it. For the most part, they are pretty good. There are some really bad ones out there. There are some who are worse than others. We know that. We've covered them all. But I don't know how that happens either. I know you're going to miss one every now and then, but that was 4 inches off the plate. I'm not sure what he was thinking. And it kind of, actually, he did cost the Cardinals a home run. It should have been a walk instead.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it should have resulted in a walk. But anyway, this is a time the Cardinals are starting to struggle. They are now just a game above 500, and the good start for them has not changed the way I view them as a team in 2026.
No.
This, to me, is still all about individual performances. Of course,
yes.
I want these guys to get a taste of winning. I want them to see what that's like, but it's really not that realistic for a team that is assembled the way this one is to be a winning team at the end of the year. Maybe they will. Maybe they'll surprise.
Yeah.
But I didn't go in thinking that. The projections don't think so. Most of the people around baseball who did their own projections, not just talking about FanGraphs or Baseball America or Baseball Prospectus. I mean, they didn't think so. I mean, they have their models that they use. But I just think the casual observer even would not have picked this team to be particularly good. What is important, though, is how individuals are doing. And I want to highlight somebody here because we talked so much about him when the season started because he got off to the best start by a mile. And that's Jordan Walker, who now, over the last couple of weeks, and we're talking about 10 games here, he's hitting 205 mm-hmm. with a 311 OBP. OPS is at 568. So this is a 10-game stretch of really bad baseball. And this begins for him after he hit that final home run. He had that stretch of games right. where he had hit 7 home runs over like 9 games, and he was just absolutely murdering the baseball. Well, that has trailed off a considerable amount. The question now is, Kevin, is this just that rough stretch we were expecting him to have and then he'll come back and rebound? Or is this the beginning of something where he's not going to be able to rebound from it? I don't have any. I'd love to tell you that, yeah, I think he'll be okay. I think he's going to be fine. And I hope that is the case. I hope that the growth, or what we thought was growth at the beginning of the year, is real, actual growth and not just a fluke. I want to lean toward that, but I wouldn't. I'd be lying if I told you that I wasn't at least slightly concerned about what we're seeing now.
I mean, the whole thing, and it works. This works both ways on the scale, right? Just like we shouldn't be overly excited about a good start, we shouldn't be overly worried about a 4-game losing streak either.
Right.
You know, we don't need to ride the roller coaster.
Right.
The point is, as you said, I think you nailed it. It's about individual development, and the Walker question is an interesting one. We're not going to have that answer until we see the whole thing play out. You know, he's going to go through a slump because the numbers he was putting up were not sustainable. Unless you're Aaron
Judge,
not.
Yeah,
they're not sustainable. He was going to hit a slump. So now the question is, how long does the slump last? When you bounce out of it, what does it look like? How much streakiness is there to it? Right. I mean, that's what we're going to have to find out. And he's done some things. He's made changes, and he's certainly making way better swing decisions. And hopefully that'll continue. Even during this stretch, Ronge, where he's not put up the numbers, I'm still seeing pretty good at-bats. You know, none of the ones that last year where you're like, oh my God, he doesn't have any idea what he's doing out there. Mm-hmm. Last year he was lost. He was feeling for it. It was like almost like blindfolded, you know, trying to figure out where the ball is going to be. Where now at least you can see that he's seeing it. And he's making some better decisions, even when he's not getting the production that you want him to get. He's going to strike out. You know, and he's going to be a guy that hopefully will be he can carry you for 2 weeks. Then when he falls off, somebody else picks you up. But the guys that we're really keeping an eye on, Walker, Mason Wynn becoming a more consistent offensive player over the course of 6 months would be a phenomenal outcome because he's already an elite defensive player. But we're not going to know until we get to the end of 6 months. And if you looked at Mason Wynn 2 weeks ago, and we all did this, we were worried because the numbers weren't very good. Now he's had two huge weeks. You know, he's slugging 600 for the last 2 weeks, and he's hitting 400. So the numbers now balance out, and it's so early in the year. I mean, we're not even into May yet. It's so early in the year that there's going to be a lot of seesawing back and forth. There are some things that are legitimate concerns because they reflect long-term issues, right? Concerns about the pitching staff, not striking anybody out, not getting deep enough into games. The bullpen is not only struggling in a bunch of spots, but now they're getting overworked.
That's right.
And that's a real concern because those are players, a lot of them, that have had struggles throughout times, and they're trying to prove that they're getting past those things. Same thing with Victor Scott. Victor Scott's a legitimate concern, but a good month would turn it around. If he could go out and have a good May, well, now we're back to level. We're back to a point like, okay, let's see it play out. And it's the hardest. You've followed a team rebuilding. I've followed teams rebuilding. It's the hardest thing in the world to not form conclusions early.
Well,
it's really hard.
And you're right. And in fairness to the team I covered, we're talking about the White Sox here, they did rebuild, but they waited too long to pull the trigger on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And they didn't do it until I was done. So I think my last year was 2015, and by, I think it was about 2017 or 18, they started the really lean into it and understand, okay, we got to rebuild here, and we can't just keep going on the way we've been going on. Greg Amsinger is going to join the show. from MLB Network. He'll be with us. Mike Claiborne is at 12:30. Kevin and I will take you all the way until 1 o'clock here on the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
The pitch to Weatherholt. Jammed him and it's popped up. It's foul. Third base side. Is there a play for Rivas? He makes the catch over by the dugout, and this ball game has come to an end as Seattle sweeps the Cardinals, winning two games by 3-2 scores, including today.
That's it. Cardinals got swept over the weekend. Pittsburgh Pirates tonight on the road. The Cardinals will play. We've got a pregame at 4:45 and then a 5:40 first pitch from PNC Park. So we hope you'll be listening into that. Don't forget that you can get the Odyssey app and listen to the game live as it happens for free if you're here in the St. Louis area. Time to welcome in Greg Amsinger from MLB Network. He's not the face of the network, he says. He is the hair of the network. And he joins us every Monday just after 12:15. Greg, hello.
Guys, how you doing today? Happy Monday.
Hey, happy Monday to you. And, you know, Kevin and I were just talking about this weekend series, and they got swept. And I think you and I have differing thoughts on what this team might ultimately be in 2026. And I'm not so worried about the record because I wasn't expecting much of the record. It's more about individual performances. But after a weekend like that, what are your thoughts on where the Cardinals stand now?
Well, it's funny because before the season started, based on the starting pitching of the Seattle Mariners, one of the best closers in the game, a lineup that's fully loaded. And, oh, by the way, Cal Raleigh's back. He had a huge weekend against the Cardinals. They're my pick to go to the World Series. The Seattle Mariners were my preseason pick to go to the World Series. I view them as one of the top five teams in baseball. So if you go back and you look at each one of the games, weren't they competitive?
Yep.
I mean, I know game one was a slugfest. It was wild. It was crazy. But the Cardinals hung with the Mariners in each game. Rob Refsnyder hits the home run yesterday, 3-2 the final. It wasn't like a lost weekend where the Cardinals were trounced, and you clearly saw a gigantic disparity between an average baseball team in Seattle and a below-average team in St. Louis. No, to me, I think that the New York Yankees now have become the favorite to go to the World Series in the American League. But I would put the Seattle Mariners, regardless of what the record is right now, as the second best team in the American League. And based on that, if you look at the way the Cardinals played in each game, they hung with the second best team in the American League.
Yeah, I would look at that as exactly the way you do, Greg. And I would say, too, that one of the great traits that's been established early is that compete level, which is what you need to see from a younger team. When you're looking at guys that are trying to assert themselves, Nathan Church has been asserting himself for the last couple of weeks. Mason Wynn's been on fire. That's to me a trait that can carry into these next couple of years as you get where you want to be.
You know what's funny? Sometimes fans don't understand the way players are playing. And I became a huge fan of on pace because we grew up looking at the back of baseball cards, and you would look at a guy like Ray Lankford, 25 home runs, 99 RBIs, 29 stolen base. That's a good year. That's a good center fielder, right?
Yeah.
We know what season stats mean, right? So J.J. Weatherholt's on pace for, I think, 25 home runs and 85 RBIs, and he's going to steal 32 bases. Man, that's a really good rookie year. Ivan Herrera's on pace for 28 home runs and 110 RBIs. Wow, that's crazy. Alec Burleson, he's on pace for 17 home runs and 106 RBIs, something around there. Okay, mm-hmm. Well, that's not terrible. Then you go through and you start looking at Jordan Walker on pace for 50 homers and 125 RBIs. Holy smokes! Like then you start this kid Church is on pace to hit 30 home runs and driving 85. Are you kidding me? Time out. These guys are hitting. The starting pitching and the bullpen lacks swing and miss. This is not breaking news.
Nope.
We knew this was going to be the case going into opening day. At the end of the day, if you knew the Cardinals were 27 games into the 2026 season, and you said, Greg, we're bringing you onto the show because we know you can see into the future. Tell us what the Cardinals' record will be and give us some of the stats of some of the players 27 games into the season. If I told you they'd be 14-13 and I ran through some of the on-pace stats I just gave you, you would think I was full of crap and you wouldn't believe me.
I don't think you're wrong. And it's a fascinating thing to watch because I think, Greg, what we knew would be a problem, the swing and miss, has been a problem, and I'm not sure there's an easy solution for it. That concerns me way more than any potential slumps on the offensive side or whether or not the bottom of the order comes together and gets a little bit more offense going on a regular basis. Because in a game where, you know, when you're 30th in the league in swing and miss, it's really hard to make adjustments and get yourself out of jams, just as an example.
You know, we look at swing and miss, and I used to look at it the same way. It's all created equal. Well, it's not.
Yeah.
I think McGreevy does a terrific job of this. Yes, he doesn't get the swing and miss that most number two starters want to get, but he induces weak contact.
Mm-hmm.
That is the pitch to contact that you're looking for. You know who's the greatest at this? I want to go back in time. Early 90s, Bob Tewksbury for the St. Louis Cardinals had a magical season where he struck out hardly anyone. Mm. But my goodness, did he induce weak contact. It can be done. A lot of pitchers back in the day were successful this way. Here's why pitch-to-contact starters can actually behoove a franchise in this part of the competitive evolution like the St. Louis Cardinals are right now. Because pitchers that can induce weak contact, that's the problem. They're not inducing weak contact. They're missing over the middle of the plate, which can't happen against hitters that are this dialed into velocity right now. So they're not hitting the spots like Bob Tewksbury did. But if you can induce weak contact, your pitch count is low.
Right.
Therefore, you can give more length. And the bullpen, Jojo Romero, I feel like he's pitching every day. Okay? It's impossible.
I bet he feels that way, too.
Yes, it's impossible to provide swing and miss out of the bullpen when you're throwing every single day. So this bullpen, I think, is a strength, needs to get some rest. The pitch to contact needs to become weak contact, and you're going to see things come together on the mound.
Yeah, I think that, again, the season is really going to be about a lot of, for me anyway, a lot of individual performances, in particular the younger players. And Kevin and I were just talking about how good J.J. Weatherholt has looked. And I know we've talked about him a lot, but he and the other part of the middle infield in Mason Winn, he's looking pretty good now over the last couple of weeks. So as you see that solid middle of the infield, Greg, what are you thinking at this point?
Look, when you look at a baseball team, I think Victor Scott is given ample opportunity to provide that up-the-middle championship look that the Cardinals are trying to acquire, right? I go back in time to the Kansas City Royals when they traded Zach Greinke, all right? What did they get back? They got Elcides Escobar, their starting shortstop of a world championship team. Lorenzo Cain, their starting center fielder of a world championship team. Big game James Shields on the mound, right? Who they flipped one of the pieces to get James Shields. Like, you build a championship team up the middle, and you can start seeing, I mean, Victor Scott's defense is off the charts. His ability to bunt now is great. And stealing base is awesome. He's kind of like the perfect nine-hole hitter for any really good competitive team. If he could just get on base more, now he's a super weapon. His defense is so good. Church and left, whoa. I mean, Lars Nootbaar is going to get a chance when he comes back. But the way this kid's playing defensively, robbing home runs, showing that he's got pop, he's continued what we saw in spring training into the regular season in the big leagues. These are the pleasant surprises that we weren't seeing in previous seasons in St. Louis. And there's a reason for that. Sports psychology is never really combed through enough. When you have multi-millionaires sharing locker rooms with kids that are nervous and trying to make it in the big leagues, that just it creates an environment that does not lend itself to comfortability. Right now, it looks like all of these young players are on the same level of comfortability, including one Jordan Walker. So that makes me excited. It should make anyone in St. Louis excited. And as I look at the way they're building this team with defense, position player success, this is good. I said this before. I say it every week in the show. This is not a rebuild. This is a team that is going to be competing for a playoff spot, and I believe will be a buyer at the deadline. This is a completely different thing that people believe. This is not a rebuild in St. Louis.
So what are you seeing with Walker? Because last 10 games, he's hitting barely over 200. His OBP is a little over 300 now. You know, the strikeouts are about the same. Maybe he's striking out a little bit more than he was before, but really not all that much. So is this just one of those slumps that we kind of expected to have happen and that you believe he'll rebound from it? How do you see what he's been doing lately?
I'll tell you exactly what's happening. In pitchers' meetings, everyone has to now spend time on Jordan Walker. Jordan Walker's the first name brought up in pitchers' meetings of the opposition. That was not the case for the last 2 years. I don't know if he was ever brought up. So now there is a central focus on this right-handed hitting cleanup hitter. This always happens when a young player really emerges, really breaks out, okay? That there's a book written on the guy. And now they're like, okay, this guy's not chasing as much, so we have to bust him in, show him in, and then go to the breaking ball away. There's an adjustment being made league-wide to Jordan Walker because, like I said last week, he's one of 20 players that has the physical talent to put a team on his back and offensively carry them because of his ability to hit the baseball so incredibly hard. So Jordan Walker is now striking fear in the opposition for the last 10 days. The opposition is spending time focusing on how to get him out. So now he has to recognize, what are the patterns that have been attacking me the last 10 games? What have I been falling for? It's a chess match. It really is. I believe in this young man because he already ripped the hardest part of the Band-Aid off. And once he gets through this hurdle, you're going to see this guy go, oh, you're trying to do that to me. Oh, you're trying to do that to me. These are the adjustments Jordan Walker's making in real time. And it's an exciting time for a young man who has clearly struck fear in the league.
Hey, Greg, I think we need to put you on hold for just a moment because we are getting some severe storm warnings right now. The tornado sirens are going off here in St. Louis. We knew that this was going to happen.
One of those
thought it was
going
to be a little bit later. So I think we need to say goodbye to you, and we will pick things up again next week, Greg. Thank you for
being
with us.
Take care, everyone. Be safe.